حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، طبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا سيدنا ومولانا أبو القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: إن الدين عند الله الإسلام. صلوات على محمد. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala declares in this ayat in Surah Al Imran that surely and certainly the deen with Allah, the religion with Allah is Islam. And our subject in these nights of Muharram that Allah swore by is understanding Islam. Most of the problems that Muslims have faced throughout their history, by which they have been humiliated and disgraced over the ages, has always been because of this one subject of understanding Islam. Their misunderstanding has led and is leading them to making mistakes and to acting upon something that is leading them not towards their destination but away from what Allah intended for them. And when we look at this issue, it's more so relevant nowadays than ever. And I can say that as an example, whenever a Muslim in the Muslim world speaks out or challenges a principle of Islam or a law of Islam and brings out something as an alternative to what Islam has said, then you see many titles are given to him. He is called open-minded, broad-minded, intelligent, thinker, philosopher, and even an Islamic expert. And his expertise on Islam is that he challenges the law of Allah or a principle of Islam or a fundamental issue in Islam. And he is praised not by non-Muslims but by Muslims. And if a Muslim comes along and stands up for a principle of Islam or a fundamental of Islam, then he also gets some labels And those are extremist, fundamentalist, narrow-minded, short-sighted, and you can go on with that. Here we see this disparity in the thinking of Muslims, that when Islam is being stood up for, Muslims criticize the person who stands up for it. And when Islam is being downplayed, then you see Muslims appraise that person. This disparity shows that there might be over 1 billion people who say La ilaha illallah, but there are still only a few who love what Islam is. Only a few are the true followers of Islam who endear themselves to Islam. Otherwise, if Muslims had endeared themselves to Islam, then they will stand up for Islamic principles and stand up for someone who stands for Islamic principles. But this is a result of lack of understanding and misunderstanding of Islam that we want to discuss in these 10 days that we are here. And now, all I want to say today is that this has gone so far to such an extent that now even things and events that should be regarded as events of sadness and grief are being regarded as events of happiness and joy. This is how far the misunderstanding of Islam has gone. And one such event, in this case in point, is the event of the Hijrat of the Prophet. As the new year starts in Muharram, and it starts by remembering the Hijrat of the Prophet, Muslims view Hijrat as a happy occasion. When you hear about Hijrat, you think that this is something of a joyful occasion, when in reality, there's nothing to be joyful about Hijrat. The Prophet is being kicked out of his house, banished from his homeland, his life is being attempted to be assassinated, and he is in despair, and he has to flee from his hometown. So in all this situation, what is there to be happy about? Hijrat is not a time of happiness. Hijrat should be a time of grief for us that makes us upset as to why it happened. You see, this is the reason the misunderstanding of the events and the concepts of Islam are such that now when we look at Hijrat, we see that all the Muslims are like, oh, this is such a great event. This is such a nice event. And Islam has a meaning established because of this. But you see, Hijrat is showing us and is reminding us that the Prophet had to leave his home, had to leave the place where he was born and raised. And you know that love for your homeland, or watan as it's called, has a place in Islam and has been emphasized by the Prophet and the Imams. They said, Hubbul watan min al iman. Love of your homeland is from your faith. Now obviously that's also misunderstood, as we will see. Because when we see hadith or when we hear hadith, we need to take them as they have been told, in the context they have been told, in the realm of all the Islamic knowledge that has come. And this hadith, as you know, is taken by Muslims who now move to, for example, America or the West, and say, you see, even in hadith, and even Rasulullah said, "Hubbul watan min al iman," and that you should be patriotic to your homeland. But you see, the example of the life of the Prophet and his hijrat shows the true meaning of this hadith and what it means. He loved Makkah. He loved being near the house of Allah. This was his home. But you see, the Prophet was a man with a mission. A man who was destined to go to his destination. Who had his eyes set on his goal. His goal was Islam. And his home was Makkah. And when the choice came, and when the time came for him to choose between his home and Islam, Hijrat has reminded us that a man with a mission and a goal will always choose his goal over his home. He will choose his destination over his home. Rasulullah, by leaving his home and choosing his destination, has shown that the destination for a Muslim is always more important than the home that he came from. You see, and hence, Hijrat is the name of sacrificing for Islam. It is not the name of being happy for Islam. Hijrat means to sacrifice your home and your homeland and the people you love and the place that you grew up so that Islam can be established. As a Muslim, this is what it means. So when we have, and we are living in a land where we have to make that choice, and we see that this land is going against the ideals and the goals of Islam, then it means that choice has to be made when that conflict occurs. And if we are the followers of the Prophet and have the knowledge of Hijrat, then at that point, we should choose the destination that is Islam over whatever land that we live in. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And we see that when you have Islam as your goal, and when you have Allah as your goal, then even your homeland cannot keep you away from that. Even though you see that after 8 years, after he was forced out of his homeland, he did not lose interest in Makkah. You know, it's very easy. And I want you to understand this example because it's very relevant to our own lives. He was forced out of his house and he went to Medina, where he found a new home. He found respect, he found honor, he found position, he found helpers, he found wealth. And when he found all these things, it was easy for him to say, why go back to Makkah? What's left in Makkah? They even plan to kill me there. I found a home in Medina, so let's make this my home. You see, it was so easy for him to do that. But you see, when a man, anyone, has a goal in his mind, he does not leave his goal unintended. Rasulullah went to Medina, but he did not lose sight of Makkah. And that's the reason, only 8 years later, it only took him 8 years that he walked back into Makkah as a conqueror. He walked back into Makkah as a conqueror. Those people whom the Prophet had to flee from, those people were asking for his mercy and begging for his pardon. You see, 8 years it took him, but he went back there. And he did take it over. He did not lose sight of his goal. And here we see that we have made hijrat. And our hijrat has come. And we found money. We found respect. We found all the things that we can here. But you see, do we have the intended goals of Islam in our sight? 8 years it took for the Prophet. And people have made hijrat for hundreds of years throughout history, and still they have not been able to accomplish the goals of Islam. This is because the goal of Islam is not in our sight. Our own personal interests are in our sight. But this aside, now I just want to explain one angle of this to you today, so that we can understand Islam and its concepts a little better. Salawat ala Muhammad wa alihi. You see, when you ask Muslims, they look at the mission and they see it as mission impossible. They see that it can't be done. You ask them, it can be done. No, it can't be done. It's impossible. How can we do this? Look at the size of the mission. Look at what we need to achieve. Any intended goal of Islam, to establish Islam anywhere, no matter where you came from, even if it's at your homeland or if it's over here where you're living now. When you look at Islam's intended goals here or back home, you see it's impossible. We can't do it. But then again, Allah has shown through time and period, in every generation He has shown that no, it can be done, even though you cannot do it, but it can be done. Understand this. You cannot do it, but it can be done. And how? Now let me focus your attention on an example. You see, it is said that the fort of Khaybar was impregnable, invincible. The door was so big that 40 men had to move it. Can you imagine? 40 men had to move it. It was so big. And to break into it, it was soon becoming a reality for Muslims that this is impossible. Mission after mission went there to conquer it, but it became impossible. And hence now, people were despairing that it could ever be done. They were despairing, they were hopeless, it could ever be done. It can't be possible. But then what happened is that when Imam Ali alayhi salam was sent, so that fort that was assumed to be invincible, and that door that was known to be so big, was uprooted by Ali single-handedly. In broad daylight, in the sight of thousands of people. Now your brothers, understand this point. Everyone watched it. It was not your everyday chore that he did. It was a feat that was superhuman. It wasn't something that you do every day at the gym. This was a feat that was impossible. They saw it with their eyes. And now you see, people started to praise Ali. And they all said, did you just see what Ali did? I mean, did you just see what he just did? he took the door of Khaybar with a single hand. He took it out of its hinges and threw it away. I mean, they were so much impressed by what Imam Ali had done that their whole focus was on Ali. And then when Ali saw that, now you see what Imam Ali said. See what Imam Ali said in reply to their attention, their focus, and their thinking. Imam Ali made a statement and said, "Ma khala'tu yawma baba Khaybar bil quwwati jismaniya bal bil quwwati rabbaniya." He said, "I did not uproot the door of Khaybar by my physical strength, but I did it with the strength of Allah. The strength that Allah gave me." So my brothers, understand this. This was not a normal feat. This was an achievement that anyone could be proud of. Anyone could say, "Look what I did." But you see, this is the character of Ali as opposed to character of people. If we had done something like that, imagine how elated we would feel. Now imagine how elated we would feel that, "You see what I did?" And this was something that was superhuman. Ali could have taken the credit for it. But Ali said, "No, do not look at my strength. I am not the one that you should be focusing on. You should be focusing on Allah, because He is the one who gave me the strength." So the one, salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. The one who takes the focus away from himself and turns it towards Allah is called Ali. And the one who takes the focus away from Allah and puts it on himself is us. Look, I want you to imagine this. And this is something, realize it, what it means. My brothers really understand what this means. An example would help if you send me a salawat. You know, little menial jobs that we do, little things that we achieve in our lives, we are so soon to take credit for it. You know, the kids here would understand this example, you know. Examples help them to listen. You see, when we came to, let's say here, when immigrants came here to the West, to America, you know, over here, you know, they found wealth, they found a good life, they found all these things, right? But really, the one thing they did not find here, with all the wealth that they might have, they did not find here is respect. No matter how rich you are as a Pakistani or Iranian, you're still a Pakistani or Iranian. Right? And when you go to the man looks down on you and says, "Who are you?" So he doesn't regard you as an equal. So now what happens is that you get all the wealth and you're still a second-hand citizen. So now what happens? Some people, they think, "Listen, we got all this money, we got all these things. Now we need to have some respect." Obviously, you know, when you get money, money is not enough. You need respect. If money is not bringing you respect, what's the use of that money? Right? So what happened is that you need that respect. So one such person decided that, "You know what, let me go back to my homeland." He was from Pakistan. So he went back to his homeland and said, "You know what? I want to become a leader here." Over here, you know, he can't. So he went there. And there he said, "I'm going to stand up for elections." So when he went back there, he had a friend, an old friend. And this guy is learned, he's a doctor and everything. He went back there to stand in the election. And he became, you know, the manager for his campaign. All right, let's do the campaign. He put the money in the campaign and said, whatever needs to be done, I want to be elected. He said, sure. So the time came for them to go on the campaign trail. And he came out in a three-piece suit, tie and shining boots and everything. His friend looked at him and said, what are you doing? This is not America, this is Pakistan. You go out dressed like that, no one's going to vote for you. I'm thinking, where do you get this foreigner from? Right. No, you need to wear some Pakistani clothes, shalwar kameez. You know, you're right, it makes sense. But the problem is, I don't have a shalwar. You don't have a shalwar? No problem, I'll give it to you. So his friend, he gave him a shalwar to wear. Now the time came for them to go out in the speech. And so he told his friend, you go and introduce me, and then I'll give the speech. So the friend went up there to introduce him and said, you know, this person has achieved so much. He's a doctor, and he's going to come and help us. He's going to build hospitals, schools, roads, and whatever. He's going to get clean water and electricity and all the promises that are made and a thing. He said, this person is the one you should be voting for, and the shalwar he's wearing is mine. Now everyone started staring at the shalwar. Now the guy is giving a speech, but they're looking at shalwar and saying, that's his. No one paid attention to his speech. The friend, after the speech, he came out and said, what did you do that for? Don't say it's your shalwar. He said, all right. The next speech they went to, next town, and the same thing happened. He was introducing him. He says, this is a doctor. He's going to make hospitals, roads, schools, and everything. And the shalwar is wearing is his. It's not mine. See, again, now everyone's staring at the shalwar again. No one's concerned about the speech. And then the friend said, listen, forget about the shalwar. It's neither yours nor mine. All right. The next place they went, same thing he said. Listen, this shalwar is neither mine nor Salawatan. Why is he so much concerned about the shalwar? You see, the guy spent millions of dollars on the campaign. His friend, his only contribution is the shalwar. He wants everyone to know his contribution. You see, this is the nature of people and humans. The little things they do, they want everyone to notice what they have done. And this goes to everywhere. You see, for example, if I did the decoration here, I'd come to the masjid and say, so, how do you like the decoration? I didn't even notice the decoration, right? He said, yeah, it's good. It's looking good, you know. Thank you. Why? Because the decoration is done by me. I have to make people notice that. You see, that's my contribution. You know, if I do any little menial things, you see, how soon it is that we take the credit for it. Little things that are meaningless sometimes, that really have no importance, when we do that, you see how soon it is that we want to take the credit for it. But I want you to imagine this. You see, what is our character as opposed to the character of Ahlul Bayt? The feat that was accomplished by Imam Ali in Khaybar was such that if we had done something like that, truly, understand your own character, understand what character is. If we had done something like that, it won't be far before we declare, Ana Rabbukum al-A'la. I am your God. Did you see what I did? I am your God. You see, how easy it is that on little things we have so much pride. On little things that we do, we have so much pride. And there, Imam Ali has shown a superhuman feat that no one can achieve and no one did achieve. But he did it. And when he did it, when everyone's mind is on Ali, Ali is saying, don't look at me, but look at the one who has given me that power. So the character, our character is that brings the focus from Allah to ourselves. And the character of Ahlul Bayt is that takes the attention of ours and our minds from them to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. See, understand what the difference is. My brother, this is how we know what character is. And when they did that, you see what it takes to say that, no, this is not me who's doing it, this is Allah who's doing it. But in this hadith, now I want you to understand this one thing. That's why I mentioned this hadith. This was just for your knowledge. But now, this is what I want you to understand from this. When Imam Ali did this, he uprooted the door of Khaybar. He took it out. Why did he have to give this clarification? That this is not my quwwat, not my power, but Allah's power. Why was there a need for this? Let's understand, this is what ties into the speech. Why was there a need for Imam Ali to even explain this? Whatever the people are thinking, that's their own thing. If they are mistaken about something, if they misunderstand something, it's their own problem. Why should I need to explain this? You see, understand why Imam Ali clarified this. Why did he say that this is not my power, but this is Allah's power? Why did he have to say that even? See? Imam Ali clarified this for this reason, my brother. You see, if he had let it be known or let this misunderstanding be there that this was Ali's doing, that this was Ali's power, then this Khaybar that was there, Ali conquered it. But the Khaybar that will be built in the future, when Muslims will see the Khaybar being built, and the enemies of Islam being consolidated, now they will say, listen, Ali is not here today. If Ali was here, he would have uprooted this Khaybar also. He would have destroyed this Khaybar also. But since Ali did that, he is not here today. So, we are hopeless until Ali comes back. You see, we are hopeless until Ali comes back, or someone like Ali comes back. Muslims of the future will be despairing and will become hopeless as to what will happen. How can we do it? It was Ali who did it. But Ali said, listen, I did not do it. It was Allah's power that did it. See, it was Allah's power that did it. So it means that Khaybar will be built again. The enemies will be consolidated again. And Ali won't be there. But Allah will give His power to someone to defeat Khaybar. So Khaybar will be defeated again. And the enemies of Islam will be defeated again. But remember this, it won't be by your power, it will be by Allah's power. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So the same enemies who built Khaybar, I built another Khaybar. The same enemies have built another Khaybar. Those Jews that built Khaybar have built another Khaybar. Then when Ali uprooted the door, they thought it was impossible, but Ali did it. But Ali said, I did not do it. It is Allah who did it. And this is showing that a Khaybar will always be built because enemies will always stand up against Islam. And they will always build a Khaybar. But remember this, when they build a Khaybar, there will always be those believers that Allah will give them power to defeat and conquer that Khaybar. Oh. And this is the reason that even if today Khaybar is being built again, you see, believers are there, that Allah is giving them the power to do it. They're not doing it. Just like Imam Ali said, I did not do it, it's Allah who did it. Just like that, if believers today are doing this. Now one, I'll extend this a little bit so you have a better understanding. You send me a salawat. You know, our Imam has said, and you know this, you have heard this many times, that there are three types of people in this world. You can divide the world into three types of people. One, there is Alime Rabbani. Then there is Mustame Al-Wise. And the third group is Hamajun Ru'ah. One is a divine scholar, and I want you to pay attention to the words. Alime Rabbani. Alim who is Rabbani. And a mustame, a listener who preserves the knowledge that he has gained. He doesn't understand it, he preserves it. Understand what it means, my brothers. Because when the imams, they speak with wisdom. And then there's the hamajun ruah, those who are gone with the wind. Right? Wherever the wind blows, they blow with it. So the imams wanted us to be either alime Rabbani. If he can't be that, then be a listener who preserves his knowledge. But do not be the hamajun ruah. So that group is out of the picture. So now let's concentrate on these two. Mustami'un wa'iz. It means someone who is listening carefully to knowledge, and not only does he listen to it, but he preserves it and guards it. Just a little explanation here. Preserving doesn't mean that you memorize it. Preserving, when it's used in regards to knowledge, it means to put it in action so it doesn't go away. The knowledge that is not put into action will always go away. The only knowledge that stays with you is that which you put into action. That's why they say mustami'un wa'iz. Now they said alimun rabbani. They didn't say any alim. They said rabbani. This condition is added. What does this rabbani mean? Rabbani means the one who has knowledge of Allah and His law. The one who has the knowledge of Shari'at, the one who has the knowledge of Allah, he is known as Alim Rabbani. You have many types of Alim. You can go through all the sciences and all the fields of learning, and whoever knows that field is an Alim of that field. But he's not called Alim Rabbani. Alim Rabbani is used for that person who has learned of God, learned of Allah, and learned of Allah's religion. He is known as Alim Rabbani. My brothers, now pay attention to this word. Imam did not say Alim and Muta'allim, that either you're an Alim or you're a student. No, he didn't say that. He said, no, either you are Alim Rabbani or you're a listener who preserves the knowledge. So Alim Rabbani is one who has learned of Allah. So if you understood that, now let me put these two things together so you understand this concept better. Now you see the words of Imam Ali on the day of Khaybar. See his words. What did he say? I did not remove it with my quwwat, bal bi quwwati Rabbaniya. I did it with the power, with the quwwat of Rabbani, of Allah, divine power that Allah has given. And here Imam is saying, Alim Rabbani, the one who is Alim of Allah, and the one who has knowledge of Allah and His deen. In other words, Allah gives quwwat to the one who is Alim Rabbani. His quwwat only comes to Alim Rabbani. That is the reason when the forces of evil have made themselves stand together against Islam, And those enemies of Allah stood up and they made their Khaybar. The only one who stood up to challenge them in this world was an Alim-e-Rabbani. It was Alim-e-Rabbani who stood up. There were many other Alims of many other fields, but no one had it in their mind or in their heart to stand up against this power structure that was being made to oppose Islam. It was only Alim-e-Rabbani who stood up against the Zionists and said, listen, you are those people who oppose Allah. I stand up against you. Now because of his stand, you see that whole Khaybar and the fort of Khaybar is falling down. So no matter how much now they want to do harm, but that fort has already been broken. Those Jews of Khaybar came back and they built the fort of Khaybar again that is called Israel. They built that fort that is called Israel. They stood there and they challenged the Muslim world. They made plans against the Muslim world. And many armies opposed them in the past, they were broken down. Many nations opposed them in the past, they were broken down. The one thing that they did not have, or they did not possess, or they did not have it in them that they did not realize, was this quwwat that Imam Ali is talking about. They did not have that. They opposed this regime based on nationalism, based on language. That's why they always lost. They were much larger. They were nations. They were armies. They had more power. They had more physical power. But I want you to understand, now a group of people, not even an army, a small militia, a small group of people stood up to this fort, went to this fort, took that door that seemed to be invincible off of it, and exposed it for what it is. This was not done by their strength. They believed in that strength that Imam Ali is talking about. My brothers, that fort is already broken. They're on the downfall. They're really on the downfall. Now all they can do is pick on children. These cowards, that's all they can do. Pick on children. Kill little children. Kill innocent people. Because those who were your size beat you. And that is written down in history. And you can't run away from that. And now you come over here and now you pick on little children to show what? That you have power? That you are strong? You see, this is the last sparks of a dying candle. My brothers and sisters, you see, again, and I'm saying this so that we also understand why we are protesting. We are trying to tell them, listen, if you want to pick on someone, pick on someone your own size. But you already did that and you lost. You have already lost. So now what are you trying to do? This show of cowardice and ugliness just goes to show what kind of character you have. This is what we are trying to tell the world. You see, this is what we are trying to tell the world. My brothers, this is quwwat-e-rabbaniya that brings down things that we see as impossible. Not our strength. We don't do this. This is Allah who does this, and He gives His strength to those ulama that are Rabbani. You see, Imam Khomeini challenged America and Israel. And there you see Hassan Nasrallah has challenged Israel. And his challenge has worked. You know, and now when we understood what Quwwat-e-Rabbani is, now you see, when this happens, then our job is what Imam Ali had done, is to turn the focus from ourselves to Allah. Understand this. Now it's time for us to say that no, it is not we who did it, but it is Allah who has done it. This is the character of Ahlul Bayt. This is the character of the Imams. That when people looked at them, they said, no, this is not us who is doing it, it is Allah who is doing it. My brothers, the stand that Imam Hussein made was not something simple. It's not something simple, Wali. The journey he took, the sacrifices he gave, the hijrat he made, it requires courage, bravery, guts, faith, trust, patience, and complete trust in Allah. And you see what he had achieved, if anyone looks at it, really it is enough for a person to say that if there was anyone worthy of obedience other than Allah, this has to be this place. But with all that grandeur and all that achievement that Imam Hussein made, with all the things Imam Hussein made, really what made his mission complete was the final sajda that he made. And in that final sajda, that final prostration, he completed his mission by saying, listen, I did not do this. Look at the one I'm prostrating to. He is the one who gave me the power to do this. My brothers, the achievement of Imam Hussein is not something simple. It is remarkable. It makes the mind wonder what kind of achievement he has made.